this ties in with the KIN, which most of you have started to have gotten into. Glad you liked it. It's pretty intense. The two free rights today are more relaxed, sort of other culture than what you're used to. First one is from Hawaii, and it's a love song, and you can hear water in the background. The woman is serving the people who are singing, and it's to me a lot of tenderness in it, but a lot of relaxation too. The second song is from India, recorded in a monastery. The monks who are chanting are specially trained to develop their voices, so it'll sound a little bit different from any music that you've heard before. And a lot of people think it's not music, but they're really getting into their meditation state, so it gives you just a little hint of some of the intensities of meditation. So again, the first one from Hawaii, and the second one from India. Free rights.
Two free rights.
Thank you.
produce that quality of sound in their voice.
We're not going to be able to talk about everybody's shrine. And some of you don't want to talk about your shrines. In fact, that's the least thing you probably want to do in the world, which probably means it's what you should be doing, but that's another story. I think maybe what we could do is find out if there's anybody who either wants to talk about their shrine or knows of a shrine that was particularly powerful for them that they would like to talk about.
Were they for, did each picture have a certain meaning, or were they for your growing up and the new thing that you did, which I
the three children, the one in the middle was represented the girl that I pretty much grew up with. Her name was Angela. She was about 2 years younger than I was. And two boys were her older brothers. The one with the basketball reminds me of Tony. And the other one with the glasses reminded me of William, and he was usually shy. He was really bright. So they lived next door to me. They were like that.
What's the white, is the white dot the top part of the egg, or is it you?
The white dot is me amongst the black community.
What's the egg?
The egg is, probably broke out of the black community into the white community. Because I pretty much grew up in a black community until we moved out here. I always associated with black people. I really never had any white friends. The major part when a child grows up, so kindergarten through end of third grade.
Where was this?
Huh?
Where was this?
In Tennessee.
Was that good or not so good?
I think it was good because I'm not biased, I'm not a bigot, and it really hurts when I see people who are really prejudiced against blacks or other ethnic groups like the Mexicans or Italians or Jews or, I mean, any kind of group.
Has it become more evident to you appealing to you because of the, it's so, yeah.
Why is that?
I'm a genius.
Upper class.
Yeah, is that really, I mean.
There are only a few blacks.
I know, I mean, I came from a, I mean, I'm nothing compared to yours, but look, I mean, look more than PLU. And it's really bothered me. I don't, does it bother
me? The only, let's see, well, does everybody know who Bruce is? He's the son of Karen Milmer, the one that runs the CC. He's really nice. Let's see who else. Jackie and his, her sister, they live off campus. But I don't, every dorm I've practically lived in has had no people.
To bother you?
Yeah, in a way. I think they're maybe the ones that have come to PLU, most of them have lived off campus, just because I don't think they feel like they fit on campus.
What were some of the emotions and feelings you were trying to portray in the shrine?
You're going to make me think.
Not think, feel. Or just say what your feelings are about that.
I felt secure. Yeah, I think so. In that, I know that their skin color was different from mine, and that I was the only one my kind around.
Did they give you anything, any crap about it?
Mm-hmm. Is it hard for you to trust whites? The shape.
Oh, the ape size. That was when I was 8 years old. Somebody said, Somebody talked about the pinnacles on top, saying that it gave them a feeling of sharpness. That was very interesting. Because I was going to cut them off, and I just ended up leaving them.
Project, especially if you're not used to making it, is that when you choose to sort of leave something just because on a whim or because you were lazy, it usually isn't because it was a whim or because you were lazy. It sort of happens without you knowing it. So it really is sort of interesting that the pinnacles communicated some very specific things to people that you may not have intended to do, but it'd be interesting to think about what that may or may not mean. I mean, I wouldn't lose any sleep over it.
Have any of you seen any African art? Is there any relation to her shape that she chose?
Black has a lot of connotations that aren't particularly positive, which I'm sure is one of the things that didn't make it easy for blacks to get by in a white-related world. But it's sort of interesting that Carrie's feeling about black was about security, and our feeling about it was oppression. Mostly because of what we bring to, what we project on to the color itself. When I saw that black box, I mean, I saw this object of weight and presence about it. I mean, it was talking to me in bass tones, and it was ominous. It was not something that you could sort of easily dismiss. It instantly took my attention, and that's just because of the cultural relativity, the way we look at that color.
You're saying if she would have colored it pink, you would have responded totally differently.
Exactly.
But then also, again, it's, you know, look at the amount of black on it compared to the amount of the white in there. It's so overpowering.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Overpowering is a good word.
What made it not so foreboding or whatever was the pictures, I think. I mean, that kind of took away from the darkness that black usually puts on me.
I felt the opposite. I felt that it made it even more, even stronger, because I saw segregation and racial crime going on in the two pictures, and I wasn't sure about the other three. They just...
Can you respond to any of that, Carrie, at all?
The school buses with the cop car in front, there were a lot of cops around. I can vividly remember.
But did you feel, you felt comfortable and secure, you never felt threatened?
Well, the neighbors that lived next door, they had a pretty big Doberman. And every time a stranger was on the block, you could hear him for miles. They had a 12-foot fence around their house. This dog was a horse. But he was really friendly. He used to knock me down. Wow! Secure. And our house was really strange because our house was, was the only house on the block that was brick. And where I slept upstairs in the attic, and I had bars on my windows, iron gray decorated bars. And they were all on the windows.
Yeah. Would they have other houses?
But yeah, that's one of the fads down there, is put the bars on the window. And to brick their houses, they'll have a wood house, and they'll take out the wood sidings and put brick on it. And kind of like, you get richer, you have a brick house, so instead of moving, they put brick on their house, and then the next thing they do is put bars on the window. Almost like the New Orleans look with the bars.
Some of it's decorated.
They say it's for security. Well, it's almost a status symbol if you have enough money to afford bars. Or if you have enough money to have something inside that's worth putting bars up for.
Of course, that's the way it's been in New York for a long, long time.
What did your parents do there?
My dad was a professor at Southwestern for 2 years. And then... they didn't need any more, or they laid off the younger professors. And so he had a job at US National Bank down there. sort of created a job.
Well, it sounds like then your parents chose to live in this neighborhood for a specific reason.
Well, it was really close to the college at the university that I was teaching at.
Were there a lot of blacks at this college?
I think a majority, yeah.
Well, any other stellar comments?
Or Carrie, did you get any stellar comments from what was written for you?
I was real surprised by the comments I got because it was really not what I thought it was. Like, for instance, I think two people guessed that those were chairs and not a fence.
Chairs,
I was trying to make, what it was is when I was little, our whole neighborhood kids used to get together and put on plays on roller skates and people's That's what it was.
Oh, wow.
I guessed.
Oh man, that has a deep, intense meaning contrived out of this.
A lot of people thought that I was really into musicals and stuff, and that was my way to express myself and stuff like that. In a way I didn't think about, but in a way that's true, but when I was little, I don't think I did it for that purpose. I did it because all the kids were doing it. We always did things together as a neighborhood, and that was just one of the things that we did.
I'm kind of curious, we're talking kind of about aloneness in the crowd and stuff like that. When you were little, do you remember being alone, or did you get let in there? Because my first impression when I looked at it was, gosh, there's only one roller skate. I didn't know.
I didn't think about it anymore.
But, that's the first thing I thought was, gosh, not a pair. And that's the first thing is I associate it with loneliness.
No, I had a rather strict family. Like, and I used to argue a lot. I used to get in the biggest trouble because I would always argue.
I get spanked
in front of my class. That had to be truth. Even if he was wrong, it had to be right. So I rebelled against that when I was little because what I thought was right was right. So,
just like your father, in other words.
That's true. Watch that.
Oh, excuse me.
But I really, as far as being accepted in the neighborhood and stuff, no, I wasn't alone.
David was talking about feeling that sort of certain strictness, and so you picked that up, and you communicated that even though it was indirect.
I said it's real sad. I just almost started crying when I looked at this, because it was like, I think I misinterpreted the musicals and the things as in with all the other junk that gets thrown away in the garage, and it's dusty out there and it's musty, and you kind of put stuff there until it's ready to be pulled out and used again. And I don't know, I saw you kind of as a little teddy bear on your skate and you're trying to get out, but you're just in the garage and you're just kind of kept there. And I just felt so bad. I was like, oh, dang, that's awful.
But no, the pitchfork was in there just because I was trying to think of things that went into a garage. All of that stuff is.
It could be your rebellion against your dad. Your arguing.
What's a teddy bear for?
Out of all my stuffed animals that I had, and I had stuffed animals until I was 10. I think I was 10 years old when I finally stopped using a light to go to sleep. Because I was always scared. I had an imagination like monsters and claws and all that stuff until I was about 10 or 11.
Don't
open the closet.
Even at school and stuff, I have to make sure I shut all my closets and stuff before I go to bed. Just in case.
So your teddy bear was...
Well, there's only one dream that one memory that I have of my teddy bear. I guess it's kind of... Should I tell it?
Well, did your teddy bear keep you or protect you in some way from those?
Well, yeah, in a lot of ways. I can tell the story real quick and I will explain
sure.
that. Okay. When I was little, about, I think I must have been 5 or 6, and it was during the summertime and all of his kids were just out in the neighborhood. My sister had just got her bicycle, and it had no back rack or anything, and she just came up to me and said, you know, I dare you to sit on the fender of the bike and I'll take you around. I said, no way. And she said, I dare you. So I said, okay, you know, take the dare. And I was barefoot, and she was going down the thing, and she was going like this. I was on the fender, and I got my foot cut and spoke.
Oh.
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 Is this a game?
No, this is real.
Okay.
And so anyhow, my mom had to rush me to the hospital. She gave me my teddy bear. And the nurse told me that I would have to get a shot, and I said, there's no way I'm going to get a shot. If I get a shot.
But I dare you.
So, so the nurse said, she goes, okay, I was called Davey at that time. And she goes, okay, Davey, if I let you give your teddy bear a shot, will you take a shot? And I said, yes. So I gave my teddy bear a shot, I got a shot, I put the Band-Aid on the teddy bear, and I got my Band-Aid, and so I guess for that reason, the teddy bear really was security for me. I really never thought about it. Just
teddy bear.
Well,
I think that's sort of a real interesting story too, in terms of how we invest our alter egos, our little childhood alter egos. They become a way of acting out the things that we sometimes don't want to admit or act out ourselves. I've seen a lot of my friends with children now, how when they're angry at their parents, they'll talk about their anger or they'll invest their badness into their teddy bear because they can't allow themselves to be bad or themselves to feel those things. So there you were again, sort of dealing with pain through the reaction of your alter ego to it.
It's a funny story about your teddy bear, because when we did the free rides with my teddy bear, I realized that there's one thing that's real similar to me. I've had to wear glasses since I was 3, and nobody in my family wore glasses except for my mom. And so I felt really bad, and so I had these real little glasses, and when they were broken many times, and they had glue and everything all over them. But when I got to get my new pair of glasses, then Tuggy got to wear my other glasses, so then I didn't feel like I was dealing with it.
Now you all know what to do with your old contacts.
Grades, except in reverse order. And I think one of the things that we all experience in our lives is how we have to sort of have what somebody else had or experience what they experienced. What that basically says is that we don't validate our own experience,
we're
whatever
not
it
enough.
Is.
We're
and,
not enough.
And I think the important part we have to realize as we're looking at that is whoever we are is what we are. It makes no point to invalidate it. So go with it, experience it, love it, and still learn. I mean, you still have some time to get some bad experience and you'll be able to. At least it still has time to get lots of love, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I think it's real important to keep that in mind.
One last comment from Kai and then we'll take a break.
Just relating to what Tom said about what he felt is I have sometimes a similar feeling. Like last year when I was in this outdoor recreation, or this leadership outdoors class, and we went on this 3-week skiing thing in the mountains, and there was one guy who had never gone skiing before, and in a way we had to, in a way he had more opportunity to learn, I almost felt like, because we had to learn. What we got to learn was patience. Well, he learned skills. And that's not what I thought I was going there for. But sometimes I've wished that I was the one, I felt like we had to wait for him, and that I didn't get the opportunity to learn as much because we had to wait for him. And it was funny because when I was up here when I was here, up here at Holden this summer too. It was like I was feeling really good about myself, and I was feeling so up. And all these people were having problems, and some for some reason the week I came around this big thing about learning things when you're persecuted and you're feeling bad and all this stuff, and I was just like, well, look, how can I learn anything? I feel so, and it's like I just wanted to, you know, wish I felt down and that I could learn something from it. You know? And, you know, I knew it was going to happen, but it was the same kind of weird feeling. And then I put myself into a music class this semester, and then I realized that I'd done just that, but I was the person who had to, that there was more opportunity for me to learn, and I realized that I didn't treat it as well. I sometimes just said, oh, I can't do it, instead of working extra hard to.
One important part of that thing is that oftentimes we learn what we aren't there to learn, and that's what we need to do, is to surrender ourselves to the experience.
We're not always leaders, and we're not always followers in this mirroring process. Break time.
But when we think about how other people react to us, especially if they react to us in a consistent way, generally speaking, they react to us because we give them information that allows them to react that way. So it's one thing that's real important, is to let them know what's really going on. It's another thing, over time, just for ourselves, to see how their reactions are and figure out if there's any reason why we want their reactions to be that way. Sometimes we do exactly want what we get, in which case it's important to see why we might want that. Not to make it a big, heavy issue, but it is a real kind of important thing that oftentimes we think things happen to us, but maybe we want them to be that way, even if it's for us to teach ourselves some lessons.
You know, it wasn't just kind of splashing in. I mean, I think we were into it last week, but I think that I, for one, know that there's a lot of things that are pushing up.
Your analogy was perfect, because we were wet up to our necks, leaving our head the only thing left to talk about. But now we've sort of gone from below that, and we're sort of immersed in it.
I think, to me, that this talk we had this morning is so much more, it's easier for me to relate to feelings, even if they're harsh from people, to relate them and just try to look at everyone and just go, where does that fit into me? How does it relate? Where I have a harder time doing that with these books, where I get more caught up with the miscellaneous information that kind of draws me off. And so I can relate a lot more.
I don't think it's miscellaneous, and I don't think it draws you off track, but I understand what you're saying.
It's easier for some of us to learn from real people.
It almost feels like it would be good just to sit here and have everybody openly say all the vile things that they're thinking about.
Just all day.
Just so you can get it all out in the open, and you can, you know, finally know. I mean, because chances are what we think they're thinking about us is going to be a lot worse than what they actually are. Well, most of the time.
Yeah. I think also, Tom, there's something else going on in this group that may change in the next few days. And that is that we think Holden Village is kind of like Bible camp. And that is, we talk about all these things, but when we get back home, it's going to be different. Because that's where the real world is. And it's sort of like kin, the story. What is the reality? What is the real world? And what do you make of it? And can you use some of these things we're talking about? Can you get them? Can you look at yourself? And Holden is not a very safe place. It's not comfort and security in any way, shape, or form. It may feel like it, but it ain't.
That's interesting to say that, because Marty and I were just talking about that right as we were coming back from break.
Oh, wow.
That exact thing, that this is kind of like a Christian community and stuff, and that it's going to be different when we get back. I mean, we're going to have experienced a lot of things, but maybe, I don't know, the other people are still going to be the same, and it's, I don't know, we were just commenting on that.
We have to think all
the things. It was going to be different.
We have to think of all the things that we're picking up as being, that we're not going to go back, and it's going to be easy to want to fall back in the same patterns. And we're going to have to do that to some extent so we can still relate to those people, but we have to use all the things that we're doing just as tools, even if we just tools to deal with every day.
I think it's a matter of taking what's said here seriously and really risking. And, you know, you can figure, hey, 3 weeks from now, Greasehopper's not going to be sitting here looking at me. So what the heck do I care? And that's, again, gets back to the grading, that gets back to the masks, that gets back to, do I really want to go below the surface and get into what I am and what I believe in, what my image of myself is, or do I want to just say, hey, that's all right, you guys. you can do it, but not me. So that's really tying in.
I think, go ahead.
I was just going to add something to that. Just being a long-term staff person who lives here, I've been here about a year or so. To be here and make this a meaningful, purposeful way of existence, I have to make this a valid reality for a period of time, but with the knowledge, knowing that I am going to leave here again and go back to the real world, which is a real way to talk about that.
I don't like that word real. I found out that real job is RJ, and I think a better way to say it is the regular world. A regular job today. This is the real world. It's not the regular world. I think that's a more true.
This game's never going to say, I'm getting anxious. Something.
Did you not have to do with you?
Oh.
Childhoods and everything, how we have real hurts too. And you know how you said sometimes you look at other people and you say, you don't know what it's like to go through all the pain that I've gone through. But yesterday when I was sitting in the library crying with Christine, my pain was just as real as your pain was to you. And I had a very simple, very good childhood, but I think we all go through struggles and they're real to us.
See, that's what I thought that people misunderstood was that when I said that, I meant that I feel like, sure, I own my own pain or whatever, and that's fine, but I feel like if we play the comparison game, my pain is no greater than anyone else's in this room. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you can compare all you want, and there's different experiences, but it's still painful for everyone, and that's what I just want to clarify that, because I really feel that way. I mean, I really do. And I think that, you know, Christine's pain, when I see you taking the risk that you took today to be real, I know you enough. I don't even hardly know you very well, but I know you enough to know that was hard for you. I mean, that was hard, hard, hard stuff. I'm serious. It was hard.
So hard.
No, it was. And I appreciate that a lot. And part of me is like, I'm sorry, I'm going off on a small tangent here. As usual, part of me is like, Christine, I just want to pump you right now, because it's like, okay, you're vulnerable, man. Go for it. You know, take 3 hours. We'll skip lunch. We'll just go. You know, that's how I feel. Yeah, I'll skip lunch. And that's kind of how I feel. But yeah, and then I have to keep thinking that, like Chris said, okay, now we took the big dive and everything, and so now I hope that there'll be a lot more times, I mean, that everybody can get real, because you got to go at your own pace and everything. But the pain that you're talking about, Christine, is, I really appreciate that, and I'm glad you said that, because I was kind of worried that people were thinking, oh, she had such a hard time.
Let's move on to dreams and meditation. I think we've got some closure.
Yes and no. I think we do have to, I don't think we have closure, but I think we sort of have to move on in a way. But I want to say a couple things first. One, I really appreciate what we've done. I really think we have kind of crossed that, a real important kind of border. And I think in a way what Christine has done for the rest of us is given us permission to be able to experience some of that same thing and to let our own vulnerabilities out and to kind of share them and support each other and the very difficult process of plummeting those depths that Chris described. And one of the ways that you can plummet those depths, especially when you're on your own and you're very confused and there's a lot of noise going on and you can't figure out what's going on, is what I wanted to talk a little bit about today, and that was meditation. We all kind of heard that word before, and I'm just curious to know what some of you think meditation is, what your ideas of meditation are. Does anyone want to share anything about that?
Well, just that, well, I borrowed your meditation tape, and I was thinking after I said it, there's conflicting state. But I listened to it and became one with myself, kind of inner peace. And kind of
okay.
I think of it as kind of getting rid of the garbage. It kind of sloughs off all this BS that's on the outside. And you can just kind of sit there and just kind of feel yourself outside yourself.
Okay. Is that consistent with some of the rest of you feel about it? I mean, now, I remember when I was a kid when I heard the idea of meditation, it was different. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's how I felt last night when I was listening to you. I was, you mentioned about your meditation tape, and I was all gung-ho. I was going to say, as soon as you walked upstairs, I was going to jump on you and ask if I could borrow that meditation tape and go into Justinia and see if I could find myself or release myself or let everything gush out or something like that. And then one little simple thing that we started talking about with Darren and Brent, we were talking about it, and Darren mentioned something about when we were opening ourselves up, to the unconscious, to the spiritual world, or whatever, but we also open ourselves up to the evil spirits in some reason. And that just struck fear. I mean, I was really, really afraid, and we were talking about it, and Brent was talking about things to do, that he does to kind of protect his subconscious, a little prayer or crossing or some imaging that he does to, try and protect him. But for some reason, I just started thinking about that, and I was, saying short prayers, to Jesus to protect me, and I was feeling doubts that I wasn't feeling any better, really, and I decided I wasn't going to meditate last night. And I mean, I was going down and going into the bathroom, and I was scared there was something in the shower. I was walking back past Justinian, and it was dark in there, and I couldn't even look in there. I practically ran down the hall back to my room.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until, in going to sleep, because then they had to go and say, well, sleeping is just like a state of meditation. I was saying all these prayers before I went to sleep, and I found it hard to go to sleep, but finally I did, and I had the first, it wasn't a very scary dream, but I had the first one. It was, that I had these little pet alligators that I brought home. I don't know why I brought them home. I just brought them home for the fun of it, and, they got loose in my room, and I had my mom and my best friend, who likes snakes and stuff, they were, gathering them and putting them in this box, and I was just trying to find a bigger box that I knew they couldn't get out of, but that I had, that would not kill them. And then this morning I felt so relieved that I made it through the night.
Let's stop here for a minute, because you have said some very important things, and I think that you raised some issues that probably a lot of us have been wanting to talk about, especially when they knew we were getting to meditation. That's the idea of, well, if you open yourself up to the world, then you're opening yourself up to those evil things too, and how that relates to your dream. What do you think your dream was meant to you?
Well, I think, now that you just mentioned that, I was trying to think of that earlier, but that maybe somehow that the alligators, little baby alligators, represent in some way the meditation, and I was bringing home, I couldn't figure out why I brought home these alligators, so maybe I was bringing home meditations, and in my dream, I remember, Gordon handling them and how little their mouths were, and, that they really couldn't, the teeth were really small. It might have hurt you a little bit when they bit you, but, not really that much. And, but I still remember trying to find this bigger box that I could put them away in. I didn't want them to die. I was concerned by getting air holes in there. I didn't want them to die, but I wanted them to be in a place where they couldn't get out.
Okay, this is perfect.
Air holes.
Because this is my interpretation of what you said, especially in the context of the meditation here that we're going to be playing with, is that the alligators weren't the meditation, but your fears about it. And your fears were greater than they actually needed to be because of what you thought they were. At the same time, you knew somehow, subconsciously, that your fears can't die. Your fears have to live, and partly because your fears are part of yourself. Most of the time when we're afraid of what we're going to uncover in the meditation, even if we use the metaphor of it being the devil or bad spirits, what it is ourselves. And mostly we're afraid of what we're going to find in that place, not that we're really going to be overcome by something other than that part of ourselves that we've never really confronted before. Very much like what dreams are too. Meditation basically doesn't uncover anything that you can't already handle. One of the things that most of us think because of the way we've been brought up in our delightful Western culture is that we are incapable people. Like Russell Baker, he was incompetent. And the only way he could prove his competence was by becoming skeptical, by divorcing himself from the world, by proving himself in other people's eyes. We forget about most of the world not looking at life that way. They live at life a lot like Black Elk does, which is we are perfect at being what we are. We can't be anything else than that. And so we just need to experience that, and we grow by experiencing who we are repeatedly. What meditation does is it gives you an opportunity to experience you. It doesn't give you the opportunity to experience television. It doesn't give you the opportunity to experience Kate or I talking at you. It doesn't give you the experience of hearing your pastor or your parents or anybody. It experiences you. And if you accept what Jackie was talking about in the Vespers the other day about how that inner divinity exists in all of us, then all that does is give you a chance to experience that as well. The only thing about meditation that makes it a little bit difficult is you don't get it the first time, usually, or the second or the third time, because we have years or centuries, in fact, of information and ideas and feelings that we need to kind of percolate through. You need to quiet that down so that the noise gets low enough for you to hear the music. How many of us have experienced that kind of feeling where during the day people are running around and maybe the heaters are going in our house and there's all this sort of noise and something, and then suddenly at night you realize that your radio has been on very quietly all day. Suddenly when everything else is quiet, you can hear that sweet little strand of music kind of playing into your ear. In a way, that's what meditation is. It lets you hear the sweet strand of your own music that gets a chance now to come into your conscious awareness. The thing that I find that's real positive and real important about meditation oftentimes is that what it does is it really allows me to see what's going on in my everyday life with much greater clarity than I ever would in any other way. Because when you take away somebody else's judgments, you take away all the noise, and what you do is you look at what actually is there, or what you project to be there. That's another topic of about 4 or 5 day conversation. So there probably are a lot of you who are a little bit afraid of it, and I understand and respect that fear. But I think that it's important for me to state, once again, that the fear that you are afraid of is the fear of yourself. And that's an honest fear. I mean, how many of us have ever really, except in the nature of a class like this, or according to somebody else's philosophy, ever really tried to figure out what that self was? I mean, it's a scary thing to do. In fact, we grow up in a culture that is constantly giving you ways not to know yourself. Constantly. There is so much information there that is there just to subvert your asking questions about who you are. That's what the Alan Watts book is all about. And it doesn't mean that your values themselves are wrong, and it doesn't mean that you can't keep them, and it doesn't mean that whatever your religious convictions are, they can't be there either. Meditation is practiced by Christians and Hindus and Jews and Buddhists and Muslims and Zoroastros and pagans and Druids and Lord knows who else that I can't even think of right now. It's been a universal technique of doing the sacred. In fact, the early Christian mystics considered meditation a very sacred thing because they could dialogue with their soul, and thereby a soul as an intermediary to God. And that way they could get very important kinds of information in a different context other than the world as we see it and feel it as matter and form and rationality. I'm so glad, Tom, that you mentioned that. It's a real powerful dream and a real powerful message about a lot of what this class does. Meditation is another tool, but this class is getting some of you a little bit scared, because what it does is it makes you face the little alligators, the little dragons, if you will. I mean, that myth that we've heard of St. George slaying the dragon, the idea of the damsel in distress, is not just a fairy tale. It's a myth that comes from that part of us that that is a, it's a metaphor for that same struggle that you're talking about. And my belief, especially when you get down to looking at Grendel and Beowulf, we'll see how our culture developed in terms of its mythology, but my belief is you don't slay the dragon. You go there and you meet it and you befriend it, knowing full well that it's likely to not be a manageable beast. It's going to follow its own rules, but that beast is you, and you can't slay yourself. It's going to wind up being like those worms that you had in biology class where you slice them in half and they just grow two of them. Slice them in half again, then you got four, and then you got eight, and you got 16. The longer it takes for you to confront some of those fears, the greater those fears will be. I think I said this before, but I'll say it one more time. And that's that because our culture fears death so much, it creates something like nuclear weapons, the greatest death machine there ever was. So my personal conviction is the more we can confront those fears within our own context, at our own time, the more we can help make the world a better and more healing place. Kai, you had something to say.
Yeah, it's funny because the first night of this class, we were at the motel and we watched the Star Trek movie. And it happened to be this one where they were, I forget what you call it, when they
transport
people to there and then remake them or whatever. And somehow it didn't work right. And two of them came out. One was the good side of them, one was the bad side of them. And the bad side was running around the ship doing these bad things. But the good side of him lost a lot of his power. He lost his decision making. They started realizing how much the evil part of him or the bad part of him was his strength. And the whole thing went on, and at the end he had to kind of befriend it too. And then they went in the machine and they came back okay. And it was kind of funny that we watched that.
I have to know, was it Spock or Captain Kirk?
It's Kirk. I've seen that episode about five times. But yeah, I think that it's sort of funny how that mythology does come out in pop culture in a whole lot of real important ways.
And in music.
Yeah, and in music, right. And in art. I mean, after all, once again, life is a metaphor. You take whatever slice you want and you find the whole if you know how to look at it right. Before we ask Jeff to talk about meditation as it is to him, does anyone else have any questions or fears? I mean, this is the place to put them. You don't share your fears with your friends or with the class, then they're going to kind of keep eating away at you, preventing you from kind of experiencing what there is here.
Or if you're afraid to say it in front of the class, if you're afraid to share it with yourself.
Right. Or us privately, too.
I was just wondering that kind of what Tom experienced, you know, he was kind of fearful about kind of, you know, going to sleep or whatever, opening himself up to meditation.
Kind of fearful.
I don't know, maybe there's some other people here that maybe are scared now that he shared his story. And so maybe they're scared and they're maybe afraid to do it. And I don't know, maybe if you can make it optional if they do this, or I don't know.
Well, of course, I never want to make anyone do something they don't want to do. But I think that the idea of, but it's like when you're afraid of something, you need to confront it. You don't have to confront it here today. And so I'm not going to make anyone do what they don't want to do. But I think what you need to be aware of as you're doing it is sort of understand that it's your fear that's keeping you from confronting it. Be nice to yourself. Don't judge yourself that you're a bad person for being afraid. I mean, embrace that fear because it's a real important part of who you are. But don't let that get away with just be aware of what that is. There are a lot of, like, I'm afraid of heights. I probably will never climb a real tall mountain, but I always push myself a little further each time as a way of kind of understanding that fear. So I accept my fear and I know my limitations, but I keep pushing it farther and farther. We'll talk about that a little bit too. But yeah, that is true. And the idea of kind of invoking a protective prayer, I'll just share my feeling about it, and it's not a fact, it's just a feeling. It's sort of the way I feel about the journals, is that if you hold back, then you are defeating the power of the process of self-discovery. And by putting a box around the meditation, it may limit some of the neat things that you can get. But if it makes you feel better, then I think the most important thing is to feel good about it. And if you can't feel good about it without it, then do it. That's a real important part of it as well. So I've had as many bad nightmares as I'm sure anyone else has, and I have delved into parts of myself that are pretty damn scary, and it always helps. It never has hurt me. It's sort of like ghosts, being afraid of ghosts. We were talking about that last night. Mm-hmm. Never knew a ghost to hurt anyone. I mean, I know about ghosts, and they sort of, you know, make noise or throw books around or something like that. But, you know, you're better off being afraid of living people than dead people. So in terms of your meditation, it's probably nothing going to go on in that meditation that's going to do you any harm, but it's what you're going to do in your own life if you don't confront some of those issues that you really need to be afraid of. If you want to be afraid of yourself as you're awake, not as yourself as you're asleep or meditating. But that's my point of view, anyway, and I don't want to impose that on you. So Brent's right. If you feel uncomfortable, that's perfectly okay with me if you don't do it. Listen to the music, listen to what we say.
Question. It's usually like when I hear about meditation, it's people come up feeling like refreshed and like they can, you know, start the whole new day, and it's like their source of energy. Do you get that from mm-hmm. meditation?
Jeff, why don't you come up and start talking about your, or you can stay where you are. And talk.
Well, I don't feel like I can't really see anybody. Or not. Everybody.
Okay.
Well, we've got a spot for you right here.
What?
We've got a spot for you right here.
Lori and I were chatting the other day, and I was asking him what he was going to talk about in the dreams and meditation section, and we just got to talking, and I said,
I just want to move this away so people can see
you.
I'm sorry.
That was only his childhood he did away with.
Okay. So, anyways, I offered to share what my experience has been with meditation and point of departure into thinking about meditation and just delving into it and trying to figure out what it is or how it could be effective or something. I think first I'll give some background about where my experience or thinking about meditation first started. When I was a senior in college, I participated in an international studies program, and it was titled Term in the Far East. And we went, a group of 20 students with two field supervisors traveled to the Far East to several different countries for 5 months. And we toured and went sightseeing and that, but then we also spent, the bulk of the trip was spent in Thailand. We spent 3 months in Thailand and studied at a university there, and then each student lived in a Thai home with a Thai family. We would go to the university for school. It was, aside from the fact that we were Americans, I mean, we were following roughly the same schedule, living in a Thai home and going to a Thai university. One of the classes we took was a religion class on Buddhism, and part of that class was a week-long stay at a Buddhist monastery, or they call it a wat, W-A-T. And we went to the, we actually went and lived at the monastery with the monks, with the Buddhist monks, and had instruction in yoga type exercises, breathing exercises, and different types of meditation techniques. By a Buddhist monk. He'd been a Buddhist monk for 40 years. A little bit about that experience there. At the time that I had that experience, I was, how should I put this? I was committed to a certain style of Christianity at that point in my life. And that had a lot to do with how I participated in that, the meditation exercises in that I participated. And learned a lot. I mean, as far as just learning about how to do certain things, or what are the options are for meditating. But at that point, I didn't really take it as a serious option because I was committed to a different type of religiosity. Since that point, my religious views and values have changed, and they've evolved into something different. And part of that evolution has been looking more seriously at some of the things that I learned in the Eastern culture, and specifically some of the meditation kinds of things that we were taught at the Buddhist monastery. So I guess what I'll just is just kind of explain kind of what how I use meditation now and the way I use it. It's evolved into something that I use to quiet myself. When Lori was talking about what going into yourself or I can't remember how you phrased it just a few minutes ago about meditation, discovering yourself, is I use it in a way to kind of look into myself and to quiet myself. And the way that I'm, and it's not a real rigid thing. It's not like I have, you know, every day I have 45 minutes that I sit down, I meditate, and then I come back refreshed and feel great. I mean, it's nothing that's structured. The time that I usually have any type of meditation experience is in the morning, right when I get up, because my body is physically really tired and really slow, metabolism slow, breathing is slow, and I usually don't wake up much before 9:30, so it's a good time to look into myself because my body is already pretty relaxed. And I found that I can wake up and be in a, I mean, I'm consciously awake, but I'm not, I don't fall asleep. But my meditation usually involves sitting, I just got a mattress on the floor, sitting on the edge of the mattress and trying to get my body comfortable in some way. And that can be in a variety of ways. You can lay down if you don't fall asleep, or whatever. And what I do is I concentrate on my breathing and my metabolism, which is very slow. And I try and key into that as a way of getting into a kind of a state. And then the ultimate purpose for me is to try and to quiet my mind, because even though I've been sleeping and my body physically is very slow and tired in the morning and it takes a while to get going, my mind, as soon as I wake up from sleep, my mind is just going. And I don't know if everybody has that, but my mind just doesn't stop. It's always going. And the way our culture, 20th century culture, is structured is such that it always is filling you with all sorts of things to think about and obligations and rational structures that you have to follow. And I find that after a while that business in my mind drains out my body. So I like to try and quiet my mind if I can. So if I can turn into myself and think about, I think some about, say, the day before and how the day went, what kind of emotions did I have, the attitudes that I went about the day with. And if I had some really strong emotions, how did I deal with them? Did I point them in a positive direction, or did I abuse them and hurt other people, or something like that? And it was a difficult thing to try and... there was a point where I had to look at the different range of emotions that we can experience and see that some of the negative emotions, traditionally negative, the anger and sadness and grief and pain, those things are valid emotions. And if I repressed them, then I wasn't being true to myself and I had to deal with them. And so what I try and do is kind of look back and see if emotions I had, if I say I had real strong anger emotions, did I point them in a positive direction? Did I deal with them and use them as valid emotions, or did I abuse them and go off the other end and hurt somebody or hurt myself mentally or whatever? And then a next step that happens sometimes is that I will look ahead to the day ahead and try and decide if, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what kind of emotions I have. I mean, I could get a piece of mail that would totally, you know, throw the whole day right off kilter. But I look ahead and try and see if I'm going to deal with the attitudes and emotions that are going to happen during the day. Try and see if I can put myself in a state that I'll deal with them constructively. So the whole experience for me is to try and turn into myself and examine what has been going on and try and prepare myself for what will go on in a day and just try and deal with that effectively. Now, people have different ideas on how to use different emotions and different attitudes,
you know, and that's going to vary. I mean, it varies with me. It varies as I grow and learn, and varies day by day depending on what happened. I mean, you know, I'm going to deal with different things that happen to me in different ways depending on what they are and what has happened previous days before. So I guess, and it's not like I sit every morning and, you know, come down to breakfast. Anybody that sees me come down to breakfast knows that I stumble down the hill and shove a bunch of food in my mouth and go out and start working. And it's evolved into a semi-consistent state. It's, you know, 5 out of 7 days I'll have a meditation experience in the morning. And sometimes it's only a few minutes, and sometimes I'll wake up early and it'll be longer, half an hour to an hour. And I try not to structure myself too much and put limits or define things too much, because I've had an experience where I was real committed to a certain structured form of worship, I guess, on a personal basis, and that backfired on me, and that all meaning was lost, and it became just a ritual with no meaning behind it, and I don't want to fall into that same trap.
Do you have expectations of it, or do you just kind of use it as a time that you will let things happen that can't happen when your mind's busy?
I try not to expect too much, because then, you know, if I place expectations like, okay, I feel like I should achieve this, or I should come down to breakfast in this mental or emotional state, if I don't achieve that, then I'm going to come down disappointed. Then I'm going to come out of that thinking, you know, oh gosh, this wasn't good, you know, I failed, I'm not meditating right, or what's wrong, or something. At this point, I try to keep it real open and loose, and it's a fairly new thing for me, only in the past. Let's see. When my original experience in Thailand, I didn't really start acting on my experience and the things I learned there until say a year and a half or 2 years ago. And I've slowly kind of got my feet wet, and I've been real cautious because it was kind of different. I'm seeing now more. I'm applying bits of my experience and the information I gathered there a little bit at a time, you know, and kind of letting it grow. It's a long process, but. Did I answer your question?
Kind of. I have a freak feeling that there's a lot, not maybe even fears, but just expectations of it, of, you know, of people thinking that this is just going to become one with yourself or something. Where my feeling that I have of what it is more that I hope if we get a chance to do it and it works for me, that I can just be able to stop and let things happen without, you know. And I guess I hope things will happen, but I think expectations, you know, might ruin it.
You know, when I started learning how to meditate, it's like I thought I was gonna hit this state of mind where all these lights go off and there's fireworks, you know. And it's like after a while, I said that's not what it is. It's just a really peaceful kind of thing, and. I guess like we'll talk about. For me, it's kind of like right before you fall asleep at night, in a way. Your mind's going, but it's relaxed, and you start, you know, relaxing. You're almost, but usually you fall asleep. And if it's not, you don't fall asleep. So you're conscious of your mind working in a peaceful state, I guess, for me.
May I add something?
Sure, please do.
Oh, I meditate. I wouldn't ever have been able to go into a Quaker meeting if I hadn't meditated for years, because a stranger coming into a meeting like that is very difficult to sit for 15 minutes. But I learned to meditate about 15 years or maybe more ago, because I felt I needed it. It was a time in my life when, well, we all pass through bad times, and then your mind is extra busy. And I knew I had to quiet before I could ever pray again or find God. And I just would go to my room, and I would sit for 15 minutes. And that 15 minutes
was the longest time that was like hours. I remember opening my eyes and looking at the clock, and 2 minutes had gone by, and I still had to sit. So it isn't easy. It takes time, a long time, to really be able to go off and to quiet your mind, because you have so many things going on in your mind. And still now, if I stop for a couple weeks at a time, or I was sick at Christmas and out, and then I came back, I still am not meditating well, but I like to sit for an hour at a time or a couple of hours. And it's a rewarding experience whether you get to that point or not, where you can actually stop everything in your mind and just sit there. It's just something that you can't let go and that you have to keep doing. But then after that, if you want, that's a good time for prayers too, is after you have meditated, because your mind, you're ready to hear God. You're ready to listen. You're ready to pray to God. And you find out that if you're not very articulate, and I can hear people pray in beautiful words, and I know that I can't use words like that, but God feels your attitude and your thoughts, and you're quiet like that. So it's worthwhile to learn. But another thing I found is a book that I had was Beginning Mind, Beginning Sin, I believe. And I learned an awful lot from that. And I think you can learn. They've meditated for thousands of years. And I think their posture is important too. To sit in a chair straight with a straight back, or the best position is in a cross-legged position, because it's nice to have all your appendages tucked in. And it makes you sit with a straight back and breathe from your diaphragm. And that's very important.
Thank you.
One thing that struck me as Jackie was talking is, as we kind of, Jackie meditates more, it sounds, to commune with God and to have the soul experience, whereas meditation for me right now is more of just to get centered into myself and how I relate to other people. And I think I have other quieter meditational times that are more spiritual in nature, but my primary meditational time now is just to center into myself and how I relate to other people. In different ways. Probably.
It's important to realize that people meditate for different reasons, different techniques, and get different responses. So that the amazing diversity of putting yourself into that meditative state is an important part of releasing your expectations. Who knows which one will speak to you. I first started meditating doing transcendental meditation. I remember they have a whole big ritual there where you bring flowers and you sort of basically dedicate yourself to this a strange kind of a place, and they have some very specific ideas about meditating so much that you eventually levitate and all kinds of stuff that I was real uncomfortable with. In fact, I still am, but that's sort of another story. But what happened is, I remember the first time I sat there to meditate, I had a cold and my nose was running, and I was trying not to cough because I was aware that everyone else was there in a sort of meditative state, and I was going to be judged by it, and it was a horrible experience because my mind kept spinning around in incredible circles, and I almost felt like I was never going to go back. But they somehow encouraged me to do that, and after about 2 months, I got to a place where I was sort of quiet enough that I didn't recognize myself the way I was used to. And so it takes a long time to get there. If you're lucky, you'll get an experience that's real valuable fairly soon, but it's a discipline that is hard. We're not used to experiencing life in that way.
One of the wonderful things that happened to me on a 3-day meditation was that I was so angry having to sit there that I wanted to leave. I was just furious. But I stayed there, and I made it through that period of snuffling and feeling like you have to cough and all these other things going on in your mind. And at the end, we had sort of a debriefing period. And I said, I wanted to leave. So I did. And obviously, I was still there. But what I meant was something different than physically getting up and walking out. There was a part of me that I decided just had to get the heck out of there. So it did. And the Zen master said, good, and don't come back. I don't know if that means anything to you, but it was very powerful to me.
The thing to remember is that there are, as many people as are in this room, you will find as many different ways to meditate.
Oh, yeah.
And it seems like that maybe we should do one way or another way, but you have to really experiment, and once you do, Jeff mentioned one way, Jackie mentioned one way. I do it a little bit differently. I don't have to sit in a certain position. I like to lie down myself. And I don't give a certain amount of time. I like to have a lot of time or whatever. And it does take a lot of practice, but you have to find a way for yourself that is so important. It's very moving and rewarding experience, but we each have to have our own way.
Why do you meditate? Why do you meditate?
Why do I meditate? I meditate for, I spiritually meditate. For example, one way I meditate is to image a conversation with Christ and to let that flow and go with that. So I'll meditate to learn more about myself through Christ and more about him, her. Plus, like anything else, it calms me down. It settles down. I think that's one inherent characteristic of meditating.
Any questions or just feelings? How are you guys reacting to all this?
I'll try it.
I've been wanting to learn something like that for a long time.
I'm curious how dreams tie into meditation.
I think that's something we can get to afterwards.
Yeah, I think that maybe the best thing to do would be to experience some meditation first. And we won't have too much time, as we've only really got a little over a half hour now and all that, but I'll be happy to talk about it. We'll have lots of time to do it, especially as something we can add during our conversations about kin, because dreaming is so important. Are we leaving because you don't want to do it, or?
No.
Maybe we'll relax. Talk about dreaming for a little while.
I think I better relax before this.
It's never happened before.
There are only two Johns in those bathrooms. Yes, how many people admit to meditating in the bathroom?
Or in the bathtub.
Or in the bathtub. It's terrible meditating in the bathtub because you wake up so cold. Yeah. You look like a white raisin.
Maybe you look like a white raisin.
May I ask a stupid question?
There's no question that's stupid.
Oh, okay. How do you know the difference between real meditation and just sitting quietly and thinking?
Well, it feels differently to me, but I suppose it doesn't. When I'm in a meditative state, there's a kind of awareness I have that's different than any other kind of awareness I experience, and I know that difference. In fact, when Jackie was leading us in Vespers, was that last night?
Yeah.
I instantly fell into a very deep meditation that was not sleep, that was very aware of where I was in a way that was distant and yet very deep, that was not in my usual awareness in any way. So I know the feeling is very different.
You need to experience it in order to know the difference.
Because I think anyone's description of it will be their subjective thing, and if you expect that that's what it's going to be, you may have those expectations that will prevent you from reaching it. But I don't know anyone who has not recognized that they have been in that state once they were there. And it's a state that is very similar to that just before you fall asleep, but not quite, because the just before you fall asleep state, your awareness is sort of slipping away, or in the process of letting go. But in the meditative state, your awareness is somehow there. It's just shifted a little bit. It's in a different place.
I'm the potter here, you know, and we're using the term of centering ourselves. And when you make pots on the wheel, you throw that clay on there. You can't do anything with it until you get it centered. You can't make anything. Any pot.
Is that a metaphor?
Metaphor.
Clay is kind of organic, too, you know? Close to earth.
It is earth.
Right. Malleable and
moldable. Jeff, do you want to get a picture of
your head? Hold it.
We still have a few empty chairs.
So
Sorry, I didn't want to get started.
Hey, no problem, Kai. We always knew you were a leader in this class.
Actually, well, I guess one thing, the meditation that I have kind of been trying to do and do or evolve into or whatever, has been tied in a lot to my religious beliefs and where I was, where I have been, where I'm going, where I am now, where I'm going to. And it's becoming more of a part of my religious beliefs, which tend to be a little bit scattered and unstructured. But it's been tied up in a, as I started to examine what the way I was brought up within the Christian tradition, my experience in Eastern culture with a Buddhist religion, and then just knowing people who are atheists, knowing people that practice Christianity in a different way than I was brought up with or that I experienced at college or something. It's been tied up a lot in an evolution of learning about spirituality and religion and how it plays in with that. And although the meditation I do now isn't, you know, like within like Eric's is within a Christian framework, so whereas mine is, if it involves some type of religion in my meditation, and then that's okay, but it's not necessarily based on that, at least at this point.
We still have the person who's absent, so
do we get to find a space in the room?
Yeah, I was gonna say that.
Maybe we could do that.
Although I can meditate in these chairs, if I were to submit my first meditation, I think you're better off if you're sort of lying down because you'll be a lot more comfortable on the floor. And I think that there are two kinds of things that I'd like to do. One of them is just a simple kind of breathing exercise, and talking about how we can let our minds, or begin the first process of letting our minds be quiet. And I'm perfectly willing to hear what anyone has to say about it. In fact, I was hoping, Kate, that one you might be able to talk a little bit more about, and then I'll talk a little bit more about the guided meditation and the music part.
Well, I really love the tape that I use. If I could use that, that would really help, because I can't say this calmly as she can.
Okay,
so
sure.
So I could just raise up and get that.
Okay, yeah, that would be great.
Okay, thanks.
One of the things to keep in mind, I think, when you first start meditating is that there's a whole lot of judgment that I used to put on myself. Like, oh, I'm thinking. Oh, no, can't think. Stop thinking. And so I would sit there instead of reciting the mantra that I learned. I'd be screaming it in my head, trying to overpower all this other conversation that's going on. That is hardly the way to sort of put yourself into a quiet state. And so the thing that is real important is to, and that's the part of meditation that I've learned a lot from, is to, if you're thinking, let yourself think. Just don't focus in on it. You just sort of, if thought comes into mind, say, yep, there's the thought. Yeah, I remember that. So goodbye, thought. Next one's going to come in, and you recognize it. You say it's there, and you sort of pretend they're helium balloons. And just one after another just sort of gets released, one after another. Whenever another thought comes by, accept it, embrace it, look at it, and say goodbye each time. And the thing about that is suddenly then your thoughts almost come in a rhythm. And oftentimes that rhythm can help you get into that meditative state. For me, I found that.
For me, I don't know, it relates to me sometimes, not recently, but sometimes I have a hard time going to sleep. But as soon as I realize that, it's 10 times harder for me to go to sleep because I try to think other things, or I try to push it out of my mind. But
just take that thing out.
But the only way it worked then was to, I had to put an effort forth to think of different things as fast as I could until I kind of lost it, and then I went to sleep.
What happens when you lost it? Can you describe that period of time when suddenly you just started drifting?
Sleep.
But just before it was sleep, can you just focus in on that a bit?
I don't have any feeling from it really, but that, I guess that there was, I had to put an effort to do all the thinking, and then somehow that got me that I could go to sleep. I don't know what it is.
When I find myself in that place, I know what happens is suddenly I stop trying to force associations from one thought to the next. That let my thoughts kind of freely associate, which is another way of letting go of the thought process. Which is why I say when you get a thought, you pretend it's a balloon and let it go, because it's not the thought itself. It's the process of objectifying them and moving from one to the next in a very kind of rigid, tight way. That's the thing that you need to let go of. So let the thoughts themselves often become the rhythm. That's sometimes why music, for some people, works very well. That's okay, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, usually when I go to bed, my mind is always working. And I get to a place where I can see things in my head that tells me that I'm going to sleep now. And that it would either say, okay, Dave, you're almost there. You can either stop thinking and go to sleep or go the other way and you're going to be awake. But it's just this image I have. I think it's kind of like a colored graph or something. I can't really explain it. But it's a signal inside my head saying, okay, you're almost there now. Go to sleep.
That's probably what the meditative state is. That experience, that moment of choice.
You ready?
I never
thought. Yeah. Excuse me. When you're lying down, you should feel really comfortable in that spot. And maybe some people will want to be up in the balcony. Also, when I put the tape on, if it's too loud, you should let me know right away because my hearing might be different from yours. So finding a spot where you can lie down when you're comfortable is really important.
So you may want to move some chairs away from wherever it is you are to make more space.
Somewhere where it's your own private bubble. You aren't worried about who's next to you or what they think or what they expect.
Thank you very much.
This is Jeff, thank you.
And Jackie and everybody else.
Most people find it most comfortable to lie on their back.
Can we turn off the lights?
Yeah. Some people like their eyes covered so that it's not irritating to their eyes.
Having to climb straight is important to the health and energy flow you put into your body. Be sure you're good and comfortable.
Took the trouble a bit.
Now relax, begin breathing deeply and slowly in an easy, natural way, not forcing anything. Keep breathing and just tune into yourself. How are you feeling? How is your body feeling? How are you feeling emotionally? What kind of energy is in your body? Don't try to change anything. Just relax and accept it all. Just be conscious of it. Now continue to breathe deeply and easily and begin to imagine that as you exhale, you're letting go of everything that you don't need. Any excess tension, nervousness, tiredness, irritation, frustration, just let go of it for now. And just let it gently flow out with every exhaled breath. Now as you inhale, imagine that you're taking in anything that you want or need. Relaxation, serenity, vital life energy, radiant health, love, prosperity, any quality of life. Feel it flowing into you as you breathe in, and feel it just filling you up. Continue to breathe and imagine exhaling everything you don't need and inhaling everything you need for a few moments. Now, I'm going to count down slowly from 10 to 1. And I'd like you to count along with me and just feel yourself getting more deeply relaxed with each count. If you wish, you can picture yourself as if you're a leaf falling from a tree and drifting down gently on the breeze, drifting down more with each count. 10, 9, 8, feel yourself relaxing deeper, 7, 6, 5, gently going deeper and deeper, 4, 3, 2, and you're now in a deep and quiet, relaxed state of mind. This is a very enjoyable, pleasurable state of being. Now I'm going to ask you to imagine or picture a scene. Just take whatever comes to you easily. Whatever comes first into your mind is fine. And just enjoy and have fun with it. Don't worry if you don't see a clear mental picture. That's not necessary. Just pretend or sense that it's there. Just make something up if you have to. The idea is to be like a child, using your imagination to pretend. So imagine that you're in some beautiful, natural place. One of the most beautiful places that you've ever seen. This could be an actual place where you've been, or it might be some place that you just make up right now. It can be any place that appeals to you, a meadow, a mountaintop, a forest, beside the sea. Could even be under the ocean or on another planet. Wherever it is, it should feel comfortable, pleasant, and peaceful to you. Explore your environment a little, noticing the visual details, the sounds and smells, any particular feelings or impressions that you get about it. Imagine that you're really there. What does it feel like? What does it look like? You can explore around. Enjoy yourself there. You can do anything you would like to do to make the place more home-like and comfortable an environment for you. You might want to build some type of house or shelter there. Or maybe you just want to surround the whole area with a golden light of protection and safety. Or create and arrange things there for your convenience and your enjoyment. You might even want to do a ritual to establish it as your special place. From now on, this is your own personal inner sanctuary to which you can return anytime you want just by closing your eyes and desiring to be there. You'll always find it healing and relaxing to be here. It's also a place of special power for you, and you may wish to go there every time that you do creative visualization. Now you may find that your sanctuary spontaneously changes from time to time, or that you want to make changes and additions to it. You can be very creative in your sanctuary and have a lot of fun there. Just remember to always retain the primary qualities of peacefulness, tranquility, and a feeling of absolute safety. So now relax here in your inner sanctuary. Sit down or lie down and make yourself comfortable, and we'll do some creative visualization of a goal. So think about any area of your life where you have a particular goal, either a problem you would like to solve, something you'd like to see expanded or improved, or anything that you truly desire. It could be your job, a relationship, a creative project, an improved living situation, increased self-confidence, or whatever. Just choose one thing to work on right now. Now just begin to imagine or picture it being just the way you want it to be. Paint a picture in your mind or create a movie of you having exactly what you want. Call this your ideal scene. You could have it any way that you want it. Picture what that would be like. Fill in as many details as you can and try it on for size. Really pretend it's happening right now and see how it feels. negative thoughts that come up about this as you're doing your visualization, don't try to keep them away or suppress them. Just notice them and acknowledge them. And then just let them flow right on through your consciousness and let go of them. And then just keep doing your visualization. Never want to try to suppress your negative thoughts. Just let them be there and say thank you to them. They're part of your consciousness too. But don't let them keep you from picturing what you really want, picturing your ideal. Keeping your ideal scene in your mind, say to yourself clearly and firmly, this or something better is now manifesting for me in totally harmonious and satisfying ways for the highest good of all concerned. I'll say that again. This or something better is now manifesting for me in totally satisfying and harmonious ways for the highest good of all concerned. One more time. This or something better is now manifesting for me in totally harmonious and satisfying ways for the highest good all concerned. So be it, so it is. Now there's a part of your mind that is connected with infinite intelligence, which knows everything. If you have any questions, you can ask this part of you for answers and for guidance. So now if you'd like to take this opportunity while you're in this deep, quiet state of mind, it's an easy time to contact your higher self or your infinite intelligence. So if you'd like to take this opportunity to ask a question or any questions, do so. Got any problem that's recurring to you that you really don't know what to do about it? If you feel confused about anything or unsure? If you're not sure what to ask, you can just ask, is there anything that I need to know right now? Or what do I need to understand in my life right now? You may get an answer in some form right away, but if not, the answer will come to you sometime soon in the next few hours or days. It may come in any of many different ways, but it will give you some kind of feeling of knowingness or insight or understanding. So just be aware that that will happen for you. Okay, now let's say some affirmations together. Repeat them to yourself as I say them to you. Everything I need is now coming to me easily and effortlessly. Everything I need is now coming to me easily and effortlessly. Everything I need is now coming to me easily and effortlessly. Everything I need is now coming to me easily and effortlessly. Everything I need is now coming to me easily and effortlessly. Love is coming to me easily and effortlessly. Love is coming to me easily and effortlessly. Love is coming to me easily and effortlessly. Perfect relationships are coming to me easily and effortlessly. Perfect relationships are coming to me easily and effortlessly. Perfect relationships are now coming to me easily and effortlessly. Financial abundance is now coming to me easily and effortlessly. Financial abundance is now coming to me easily and effortlessly. Financial abundance is now coming to me easily and effortlessly. My perfect creative expression is now happening easily and effortlessly. My perfect creative expression is now happening easily and effortlessly. My perfect creative expression is now happening easily and effortlessly. And for our last affirmation, here's one of my favorites. The light within me is creating miracles in my life, here and now. The light within me is creating miracles in my life, here and now. The light within me is creating miracles in my life, here and now. The light within me is creating miracles in my life, here and now. The light within me is creating miracles in my life, here and now. The light within me is creating miracles in my life, here and now. The light within me is creating miracles in my life, here and now. If there are any other affirmations you would like to say, any particular one you've been working with, go ahead and do that now. Try to keep it simple and just say one or two over and over to yourself a few times. Okay, now whenever you're ready, just look around your sanctuary and say goodbye to it for now. Remember that you can come here anytime you like just by closing your eyes and taking a few deep breaths. Even in the middle of the day, in the middle of any kind of busy activity, if you need to, you can just close your eyes for a moment or two, take a couple of deep breaths, and just be right there in your peaceful inner sanctuary. Anytime you're meditating, you can come here. It will always be a place of quietness, tranquility, safety, and a place where you can be infinitely creative, you can enjoy yourself, and you can receive guidance for your life. Be imaginative, enjoy yourself, and just do whatever you like whenever you're in your sanctuary. So now, whenever you feel ready, take a few deep breaths, open your eyes, and come back to the world of objective reality, feeling relaxed, energized, full of vital, radiant energy, feeling very, very good.
Those of you who are awakened with us, it is now 12, so that will be it. That was one kind of meditation. I think we'll go through a couple for the next couple class times, so I'll get a chance to experience a few different kinds.